Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Every once in a while, a technique comes along. It makes big promises about what it might be able to treat or perhaps in this case, prevent. But even though the technology is there, the capability is there, just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean you should do something. There are ethical considerations, especially when we're talking about something as basic as the modification of human embryos at the genetic level, sometimes called gene editing or germline engineering. Well, it's been given the seal of approval from a science advisory group formed by the National Academy of Sciences and the National Academy of Medicine just yesterday. So does that mean that the door is open to it both technologically and ethically? We're going to talk about the science panel support for genetic modification of human embryos. Dr. David Prentice joins us on this Wednesday afternoon. He's vice president and research director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute and spent almost 20 years as a professor of life sciences at Indiana State University. Dr. Prentice, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much, Todd. Good to be with you.
Before we get into the ethical concerns that there may be here, what promise does this kind of this technique of sometimes called human gene editing or germline engineering, what kind of promise does it make for cures or preventative treatments?
Right, and it's promises, but where does this usually start? It always starts with, we are going to cure, or in this case, maybe prevent, a host of terrible diseases. And you know, that's a laudable goal. Things like ALS, Alzheimer's, cancer, I mean, all sorts of genetic problems. But it also promises, as you were alluding to there, to start opening the door wider and wider and wider to not just curing, not just preventing, but now augmenting and enhancing. I don't know if your listeners have seen it, but there was a movie in the late 90s called Gattaca, G-A-T-T-A-C-A. And it was a science fiction movie, but based not too far in the future, where if parents could afford it, they did this type of gene editing or genetic engineering on their children when they were embryos. And there's a scene in this movie where it talks about, well, I took the liberty of, the technician is telling the parents, I took the liberty of not only removing these disease genes that you were going to pass along to your children and cause them such grief, but I also enhanced their intelligence and made them a little taller and, you know, would you like blue eyes or brown eyes and these sorts of things. And that's really where this is headed. I mean, it's interesting that the national academies have said, now, we could open the door just a little bit, when just about a year ago now, they had said it would be totally irresponsible to do this, to engineer our children, because we don't know what we're really doing. We don't know the problems that will happen to them, and we can't even tell what will happen to future generations by doing these kinds of manipulations.
So the ethical concerns might be, sounds like, of two tiers. One is it just because we can modify the genes of human embryos, should we be doing it, period? And then, of course, what kind of, for lack of a better word, Dr. Prentice, temptations would it give to those who are doing this to go beyond just merely preventing terrible diseases?
Well, and that's an apt word here, because in the one sense, the first part would be playing God, literally, in terms of not just creating another human being, but manufacturing them to certain specifications, modifying genes, removing them, and so on. And then what's the temptation to move on? And in fact, it's interesting, there historically have been scientists who have proposed this, before there was ever any dream or chance of doing it. Dr. James Watson, who was one of the two discoverers of the structure of DNA back in the 1950s, and his phrase was, if we could make better human beings by knowing how to add genes, why shouldn't we do it? And of course, hopefully your listeners are catching that, you know, that better phrase. Who's deciding what's better and how to do it and whom to do it to? Because let's keep in mind that we're talking about experimenting on human beings. They are the experiment that we're constructing with these types of gene editing tools.
Do you think we know enough about the human genome? This is like changing the oil on the car while it's driving down the highway. This can't be, you know, once done, it can't be undone. Do we know enough about the human genome to tinker with it?
No. I mean, that's the short answer. And I think even some of the scientists and ethicists on this National Academy panel would admit that we really don't know enough. Now, they want to tinker. They want to do it. And all of this decision is only about, yeah, we think it's okay to go ahead, but we really don't know what we're doing. There's a new genetic tool that's gotten a lot of scientists excited called CRISPR or CRISPR-Cas. It's simply a newer, more accurate way to make those cuts and splices and so on in the DNA, kind of like cutting and splicing out words within a paragraph, but you know, that's why they use the term gene editing. But this goes much farther beyond just changing simple words to change the meaning of a sentence. We are literally talking about changing someone's genetic makeup. What that means to them is what it means to be human. And so you could envision, maybe I would like my child to be able to see in the dark like a cat can. Maybe I'd like them to be able to jump higher. I mean, we're spinning this out into a very sort of ludicrous realm, but it's no longer ludicrous because that is where this is headed, from treating or preventing diseases, but now at the earliest stages of life, so that is passed on to future generations. And then, well, that temptation. Should we remake humanity in our own image or however we might envision it to be? And the new genetic tools have gotten people excited about those potentials.
Are you concerned about the kind of research side of this, in which human embryos are produced in order to practice, I guess, the techniques without any intention of gestating those human embryos?
Very much so. I mean, that is really where this would all start. We've been talking more about the end product over here. And again, this is a manufacturing process. These individuals would be products of this laboratory manipulation. But it will start with tinkering, with experimenting in the lab. We've already seen two published reports from Chinese labs where they did just that. They took human embryos, did this sort of tinkering genetically in the lab, and of course the embryos are then destroyed at the end of the experiment. And so thousands and millions of human embryos could be created and then their lives destroyed simply to try and practice and perfect this technique.
And would we call that destructive research of these human embryos?
Very much so. I mean, it's the equivalent of actually some things that the National Academies had already approved in terms of making human embryos only for research purposes, not to gestate, not to allow them to live. But it's the create and kill. This same group had approved cloning of human embryos, but as a clone and kill type of experiment where they create only to do the experiment, and the whole purpose in the end is the embryos are slated for destruction. It is lethal experimentation on young human beings.
Dr. David Prentice is our guest. We're talking about a science panel support of genetic modification of human embryos on this Wednesday, February the 15th. He is Vice President of Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. He spent 20 years as Professor of Life Sciences at Indiana State University. More with him after this.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Anthony Eslin will be speaking on the topic of imagination and education at the second annual Wittenberg Academy Family Retreat, which will be held at Camp Okoboji in Milford, Iowa on April 27th through the 29th, 2017. Join us and be immersed in God's Word, thoughtful discussions, and family fun. For more information or to register, visit www.wittenbergacademy.org and click on the registration tab.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. David Prentice is our guest of the Charlotte Lozier Institute. We're talking about a science panel's support of genetic modification of human embryos. Dr. Prentice, when patients go in for this or are asked to do this, what kind of ethical concerns should they be made aware of? They say, look, I would like to try this. I would like to see if we can prevent this in our children here. What should they know?
Well, I mean, they need to know, first off, that it probably won't work. Certainly at this point in time, the technique is not refined enough such that, as we already mentioned, most of these embryos will probably die in the process. There's also a problem in terms of the accuracy. We mentioned practicing. Well, they would need to practice on many, many embryos to get this to the point where it might work. And so you might want to change out one particular gene, but at this point you get what's called off-target changes. In other words, that one target, but then many other places in the DNA are clipped or changed or so on. So you might go in to try and prevent this one disease and end up causing a different disease. And, you know, then there's the whole question about, should you be doing this? Is this something that really needs to be done at the embryonic stage? And I want to make a point here that the whole gene editing technique is just that, it's a technique. And we don't want to paint too broad a brush here, because that technique could be used perhaps on a born individual to try and treat sickle cell anemia or some other genetic problem. What we're talking about is using human embryos as the experimental subject, even creating them using this, where we are placing ourselves in the position of creator and designer. And that's where there is a significant ethical problem in terms of how these tools are being used.
Given what you've seen in bioethics and medical ethics, how much confidence do you have that the scientific and medical community as it's comprised today is able to govern itself or write guidelines sufficient to prevent these ethical concerns?
Well, and I think there's a real problem there. How many groups would you trust to govern themselves? Would you like everybody to make up their own rules? And we could hope, certainly, that whether it's scientists or some other group might act in an ethical manner and have, true biblical principles that they're being guided by, especially when it comes to human life. My conclusion at this point in time is I don't think we can rely on that. I think we have to regulate and even prohibit in many instances some things that might on the surface sound very good if I start talking about it, but have significant problems both ethically and even practically. Just to mention one, we don't need to think too far back to the embryonic stem cell debate that went on, where we were promised again cures and treatments and miracles, frankly, if only scientists could be allowed to kill and take the cells out of thousands or even millions of human embryos and pour lots of money on it. Well, it's been a good 20 years since really those sorts of experiments started. There are yet to be any cures or successful validated treatments from embryonic stem cells. Despite all the promises, despite even the self-regulation, again, by this National Academy group, despite the billions of dollars put into it, whereas adult stem cells, such as bone marrow or umbilical cord blood, have treated over 1.5 million people. I think we need to really look at, that question you phrased very early on, not can we do it, but should we do it? There should be a pause to consider whether we really need to do this in terms of treating and preventing diseases.
And I want to note there, since you mentioned the embryonic stem cell issue, the promises were huge. And it was the scientists themselves that kind of got caught up in that wave of promise there. And the money, I should mention, I'd like you to talk about that, was also flowing, wasn't it?
It was very much so. Millions and eventually even billions of dollars, federal dollars eventually, certainly state dollars, number one, to do research, to build labs, to even just get certain laws, and whether at the state or the federal level, efforts to try and change the laws, get them to pass. And again, what have we seen after all of the promises, all of the hype? Nothing.
Is there a certain irony here, Dr. Prentice? I can go to the grocery store and almost whatever kind of food I buy, it has on the label GMO free, genetically modified organisms. Free. And we have some sort of natural aversion to that must be dangerous, or maybe there's some real concerns there. I don't know. And yet, at the same time, we have the same scientific community saying we would like genetically modified people.
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point, Todd. And let's just say that again. If we have concerns about genetically modified organisms, genetically modified vegetables, genetically modified animals, and whether we should consume them or even create them in the first place, or will those genes perhaps get out into the environment and cause problems and so on, why aren't we showing the same type of concern for genetically modified people? I know there's a certain draw for people to go, yeah, I would love for my kid to be able to compete in the Olympics or to, you know, win a Nobel Prize. And people get into that sort of mindset, but think about how you're getting there by actually manufacturing a human being to certain genetic specifications. And we again have to come back to that. You know, we really shouldn't be crossing these kinds of ethical lines. There are better ways, ethical ways to treat disease, to relieve suffering, and these are, again, empty promises that are being held out just so that scientists can essentially do what they might want to do in the lab.
Dr. David Prentice is Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. He spent almost 20 years as Professor of Life Sciences at Indiana State University. You'll find a link to the Charlotte Lozier Institute at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Prentice, thank you very much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to spend some time talking about what our guest for that hour is calling the alpha female. Alpha females in marriage will be the subject on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 15th, in hour two of Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is brought to you in part today by Concordia University, Wisconsin. They offer 50 online educational options for an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree, and they'll waive your application fee when you enter the promo code ISSUES, I-S-S-U-E-S. Just look for the Concordia University, Wisconsin online logo at issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Suzanne Venker is in studio after the break.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.